In the summer of 2023, Maine Public partnered with StoryCorps in a Military Voices initiative to capture the stories of Maine veterans who served in the armed forces. During the recording sessions, veterans shared details about their tours of duty and how their time in the military affected both their lives and those of their loved ones. This limited podcast series is dedicated to these Maine veterans and their families. We want to thank them for sharing moments of their lives with us. I'm Keith Shortall. Let's get started. Episode 4, We Gave Our Today. Before we begin this episode of the Maine Military Voices podcast, we'd like to make listeners aware that this episode includes descriptive imagery of war, combat, death, and PTSD. What does it mean to go to war? What happens to those who engage in combat? What happens when the fighting is over? How does it feel to be one of the soldiers who gets home, knowing your fellow servicemen and women who fought by your side, people you called friends, were lost in war? A Purple Heart recipient, Master Sergeant Daniel Moon served 2 years in World War II and then served again in the Korean War in 1951. While in Korea, Moon was active in combat, facing the harsh reality of what it means to fight. This is his story.
My name is Daniel S. Moon. I'm 96 years old. The name of my interview partner is Laura Horowitz Moon, and she's my daughter.
I'm Laura Horowitz Moon, and I'm going to try to interview my dad, Dan Moon. We wanted to talk about your time in the war, and I was wondering, today is a beautiful sunny day in Cape Elizabeth, Maine, and we're quite a ways away from any kind of combat. Also share that you joined the military during World War II, just a little background.
In World War II, I was 17, and the Army wouldn't take 17-year-olds, but the Navy did, so I joined the Navy. I served 2 years in the Navy. I got out after World War II, and then I went and joined the Army, United States Army, and was sent to Korea, and that's where I went into combat.
What year was that?
This was in 1951.
Dan, yeah. You have dates like March 7th, April 11th, April 16th.
Yeah, those are, I have PTSD, or they've been diagnosed. In 1951, they called it manic depressive behavior. And some call it shell shock. But shell shock to me was when you actually got an explosion shocks you, a shell, which did happen on March 7th, 1951, but I was more depressed and in a traumatic, stressed-out state because of moral injury of killing men, not of just seeing men die. I've seen people die before war, and you can see it in an auto accident or any accident. March 7th, 1951 was my first day in actual, real shooting combat. Prior to that was only mortar rounds and artillery shelling, cannon fire, we call it. But on March 7th, I was the BAR man, skinny as I am, but we had no one else who could fire the gun, so I was given the BAR and a heavy 20-pound harness full of ammunition, magazines. We attacked up a left ridge and got stalled with a machine gun on this side. And platoon leader, lieutenant, was looking for a way this way. Can we get around that way? No, it was blocked. Can we get around this way to get at that gun? And I was looking up, and I saw a little depression there that didn't have any broken tree stumps or anything. And he was looking there, too. And I said, I can get up there. And he said, go. So I went through all that dried up underbrush. This is March, winter overgrowth and all, real sticky stuff grabbing at my clothes. I got through the underbrush, and oh, right away, ping, 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 bullets were flying at me. They seemed to say, pity you, that's the sound of bullets. To me, I could hear was either pity you, whiz, or was. Was meaning it's close to your head. But it was pity you, pity you, pity you, like I pity you. They're sneering at me. But they all missed me. And I got to the spot. I threw myself down in a sprawl like we do in training. You sprawl down with a gun, and the moment you get up, you pull the trigger. And I sprawled, and in front of me on the trench line, it was like the whole trench opened up like the devil opening his mouth to show his fangs at me. Before he could close it, I pulled the trigger already and fired a whole half of a magazine right into that mouth, which is a trench there, and poking into two distinct figures poking up there, and I kept pressing, pulling the trigger, and they're hitting the bullets for a vapor stream going out at them. And I could see, we're only less than 100 feet away, and I could see the bullets hitting the winter tunics that they had on. And from the tunic, I could see the blinking out white tufts of cotton followed by blood. And I knew they were dead. I kept firing, firing, firing. My mouth was all dry and nausea coming up, but I held it down, and I was like an animal, a beast. Keep pulling the trigger. They were already dead. I was shooting up the trench line, and then somebody kicked me real hard on the left calf. Bang, a kick, get out. And a guy shouted, move over, moon. It was Requa. Requa was a machine gun. Each platoon had a tripod machine gun, an A4, we call it. And Requa was the gunner, and he had the loader and ammo, first ammo with him. So three guys, and I could see them set up when he kicked me over. I moved over. And I don't know, they got off maybe one belt of ammo. And all of a sudden, boom, a huge explosion. Blew blood and flesh tissue into my face and like into my ear. And I was thankful that I had my head low when I was reloading after they had kicked me. I didn't stand up to go. I crawled over sideways. So I knew that they were blown up right at the spot where I had been maybe 2 minutes ago. And my neck, it didn't want to turn me to see. I couldn't turn right away because something was holding me back. Don't look, don't look. But curiosity won, and I did. And I saw just the tail end of it, the bodies slowly dropping into the ground with dust all around it. And I knew my head was all shaking. And I think that's the last thing I saw.
Would you
have
moved?
I think it was shock of the blast, not the moral injury of the sight. They're two different things. And I couldn't tell people, psychiatrists later, you know, in my later years at Togus, I couldn't tell them because I don't think they understood. That there was shell shock was the explosion that blew that blood and flesh on me and dust and shocked my head, you know, and made me dizzy and wobbly. But moral shock was to see the bodies coming down.
And in the spot that you were just in, they...
Yeah, that was part of it. What? Yeah, you.
That you
I
were
had
just
been there.
And this was... Who were your buddies?
What?
Who were the buddies that you lost?
There were Andrew Dyson Roth, Quentin Requa, and my buddy Davy Fisher, who had come over with me from Camp Snowman. Dyson Roth, Rikwa and Fisher were dead. I woke up about 10 yards away on the other side of the ridge, still shooting because they gave me a new harness full of ammunition. And now this time I was shooting to the left without knowing even what I was shooting at. So I don't want to talk anymore about that day.
When you think back, you had said that people don't understand combat. And you used to have this sign that said something about, well, you were remembering your buddies and their future. And remember the sign you had made? And you used to take it to like the Memorial Day parade and the Veterans Parade.
Yeah,
but I can't remember what did the sign say? Because you had a phrase.
And, what it was is I had to commemorate my buddies each Memorial Day. I had the names of all my buddies down. And at the end, after the shell blew up and shell shocked my head, I recovered and went back with a couple of other of our buddies to the crater to take a look. And we took our helmets off and looked down at the pitiful sight of Rikwa and Eisenroth and Fisher there. And it could be imagination, but I know I looked to see and I saw they seemed to be leaning forward also, like I was. I could hear them. And from that pile came this mournful shout. Hey, you guys up there, when you get back home, will you write us an epitaph? Will you? Let it say, for your tomorrow, we gave our today. And I used that on the sign. That's what Laura had been looking at. Is that right?
I couldn't remember. Thank you.
Thank you.
So many men and women go to war and never come home. Lives are cut short. Stories are left unfinished, and dreams are left in the dust of a battlefield. Master Sergeant Daniel Moon was able to escape war with his life, but he was left with lifelong scars. Even in his 90s, he recalls the vivid details of his time in active combat, and he still feels the pain, both physical and emotional, from those terrifying moments. In the next episode of Military Voices of Maine, we'll meet Master Sergeant Angela Blevins, a proud Desert Storm veteran and artist. Blevins dedicated time to the Honor Guard and Air National Guard, where she used her artistic talents to create portraits of fallen soldiers. Military Voices of Maine is brought to you by a partnership with Maine Public and StoryCorps, as well as the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. This podcast series was made possible through the generous support of Lee Auto Malls, Wreaths Across America, and FedCap Maine. The series was produced by Allison New and Keith Shortall. That's me. You can listen to this podcast and others like it on our website, mainepublic.org, or wherever you find your favorite podcasts.